road. It's more than a length of asphalt between two points on a map. The open road is its own ecosystem, its own dimension, really. It offers a spectrum of experience, from tedium to serenity, to exhilaration to jaw-clenching anxiety to white-knuckled fear. Few feelings are as sickening as hitting a stretch of black ice and realizing you're in the hands of fate until you reach some dry pavement. Or seeing a dark road ahead dotted with flares, cops, and paramedics. On the other hand, some sights from the road can be magnificent. Sunsets, desertscapes, city skylines, farms, ranches, forests, wheat fields, lakes, rivers, infinite variety. And then there's your fellow travelers. They provide a bottomless mixed bag, from truckers and gleaming rigs lit up like theater marquees to bikers and trikers and everything in between. Mostly you see profiles, left side of the face. Maybe they turn and look at you as you pass. Usually, they look straight ahead. You never know what's around the bend. Even if the next bend is on the other side of a mountain range at the end of a 20-mile straightaway. And that's what makes road tripping so great. The unknown. This is part 3 of my forbidden road trip across America.
The safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry. Get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry.
I figured the drive back to LA from the East Coast would have a lot more texture and flavor than the outbound trip. On the ride home, we had a little more time for detours, and we had some good ones. In the previous episode, part 2, I kind of trailed off as we crossed the Tappan Zee Bridge, rebuilt and renamed the Governor Mario M. Cuomo Bridge, in a stunning display of family egomania. I won't reprise that here, but I will say this. The highway infrastructure, even in a poor, cash-strapped state like Arkansas, looks brand new compared to the tri-state area. That New York, New Jersey, Connecticut trinity is a spaghetti of corroded bridges and trestles, potholed exit ramps and shredded guardrails, all covered in a layer of rust and pigeon shit. Despite the fact that damn near every stretch of road has an outrageous toll on it. What are they doing with the money they collect? It's not going into the roads, that's for sure. When I lived in New York, I drove across the 59th Street Bridge hundreds, maybe thousands of times. I always took the upper level, which was in a state of decay. It was literally crumbling. Rivets and spanners and chunks of the roadbed were falling to the lower level and smashing windshields and denting roofs and trunk lids. Did the city fix it? Hell no. Instead, they installed steel safety netting beneath that roadbed to catch the falling detritus. Soon, if you drove the lower level, you could look up and see hunks of concrete and steel grating and dead pigeons and rats hanging in that netting. That's New York leadership. New York politicians. I'm so glad I don't live there. Oh, I just remembered. Last episode, I promised a list of states that are cucked and uncucked. I'll give you that list a little later, but the ones we traveled through on the return trip were Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, Missouri, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and back here to the ultra-cucked and fucked up as Hogan's Goat, People's Republic of California, and that's with a K, comrade. Kentucky might hold the title belt As the most beautiful countryside in the Southeast, it is gorgeous. There's a stretch of highway called the Bluegrass Parkway. Cool green grass and horse farms and cattle and split rail fences and big shade trees in the middle of fields. In the Southwest, the Grand Canyon and soaring mountains and deserts make you go, ooh. That soft green Kentucky countryside makes you go, ah. Lexington, Kentucky's a pretty old town. If you like gingerbread houses and Victorian architecture, you'll dig it. If you like bourbon, you'll really dig it. It's right on the famed Kentucky Bourbon Trail. Bourbon might be the backbone of Kentucky's economy. Seems like everything there is about bourbon. After many a meal in the car and outside, and restaurants on ass-punishing picnic benches due to kung flu restrictions, we finally found a place that was open and great. The Rack House Tavern in Lexington. It's in the Hilton. The place was superb. Over 300 bourbons, fantastic ribs, and great service. Everyone was laid back. None of that idiotic, uptight, "We're gonna die, there's germs in the air," paranoia that is so pervasive in many of the cucked states. Sneak preview, Kentucky seems to be uncucked. With their bellies filled with comfort food, washed down with a flight of excellent local beers, we slept good and hit the road early next morning. Now, when you're in Kentucky and surrounding states, the draw is that everything is historical. Huh? Washington slept here. Jefferson drank there. Patrick Henry hocked a loogie into that spittoon. Stuff like that. The next stop was the very historical burg of Bardstown. It's one of those places that looks great, but as you get closer, you realize it's just, a collection of storefronts selling crap that only some women might like. I wanted cannonballs and flintlocks and pewter beer steins with glass bottoms so you could keep an eye on your enemies as you drain the mug. But that's not what they have. You want accent pillows, whatever the hell those are, with Betsy Ross flags on them? They got them. How about some fancy napkin rings, maybe with little eagles? They got them. Crystal cordial glasses on Paul Revere coasters? They got them. In about 10 minutes, we'd walked the entire main drag, and I was more than ready to haul ass out of Bardstown. At one end of the street was a very historical saloon, and from the outside it did look pretty damn historical, with chips on the outside wall, maybe from musket balls, I don't know. There was a big bronze plaque about some patriots drinking there, and I thought, well, now we're getting someplace. My wife agreed to wheel it if I had a beer inside, so I opened the heavy wooden door with the big iron hinges and entered a gift shop. It was full of tchotchkes, shot glasses, and key fobs. Might have even been a couple of accent pillows in there. A woman behind the counter asked if she could help me find something, and I answered yes, the bar. She pointed, I turned, took a few steps into another room, and found myself in Friday's, or maybe it was Chili's, might have been Applebee's. Maybe Fuddruckers. I'm expecting colonial antiquity. I'm expecting brass spittoons and boot scrapers and clay pipes and muskets and ramrods and bowie knives, scrimshaw beer taps and buxom serving wenches and lace bodices. And it looks like fucking Fridays. There's a neon sign for light beer on the wall. And no bar stools. And a few tourist zombies with fanny packs and cargo shorts sitting at Formica top tables thumbing their iPhones. And I am fucking out of Bardstown. What a disappointment. Save one small encounter. On the way to the car, I met an elderly dude walking a horse. This guy was really up there, Snow White Santa beard. He had some years on him for sure. The horse was a fine specimen, and I said something about it, and we just got into this conversation, and somehow it veered to politics and the approaching election. And the guy said the most interesting yet troubling thing. He said the election might not mean all that much if the civil war we're in continued to heat up. I kind of thought discourse about civil war was limited to social media and blogs, and I would be astonished if this older gent had any digital footprint or even a smartphone. He was way past that demographic, but I could be wrong. Of course, I've been thinking that same thought for a long time. Kids tend to dismiss a civil war as being as unlikely as a pandemic. But a guy like that, he's been around a long time. He's seen a lot. And a little place like Bardstown is not Seattle or Chicago or New York. Makes you wonder. Made me wonder. Back into the fun wagon for another long drive. And when you're out there in the boondocks, it's amazing how little radio you can get and how different it is from anything you might hear in LA or New York or any metro area. You can set the dial on scan and get only one or two signals from 530 to 1700 kilohertz. And odds are what you will get will be gospel. There's a lot of gospel out there. Here's a sample I recorded of a station somewhere in the Ozarks.
Open the door, as Jesus said. Open the door, said, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any person, any man, will hear my voice and open unto me the door, I'll come in, I'll sup with him and he with me. Isn't that wonderful? Praise his wonderful name. We're going to do this next song. It's called Lily of the Valley. The lily of the valley.
I found the friend in Jesus. He's everything to me. He's the fairest of 10,000 to my soul.
I could not tell you the call letters or frequency. It faded out of range pretty quickly. It's a very different world in rural America. You will not find hip, slick, or cool, but you will find authentic. Except when it comes to Mexican food. There you'll find some of the most artificial crap ever placed on a styrofoam plate and nuked for your protection. More on that in a little while. Somehow we ended up bunking down for the night in a place called Haiti, Missouri. Unlike the Caribbean island, this one's spelled H-A-Y-T-I. It's basically a wide spot in the road, just west of the Mississippi. All along the trip, we'd been staying mostly in Best Westerns and Doubletrees and so on. In Haiti, we stayed at a Drury Inn, which was fantastic. A 10 out of 10, exceeding all expectations. You know, I'm kind of a motel aficionado. And motels are quasi-hotels like some of the Hilton and Marriott brands, they never, ever get 100% grade. They always screw up somewhere. Number one fail? The shower. Water pressure like a squirt gun. Lukewarm water instead of hot. No rack for the soap or the shampoo. A poker chip-sized bar of soap that has to be placed on the narrow edge of the tub and then always slides off into the tub, which triggers a fishing expedition. Oh, and those thimble-sized bottles of shampoo and conditioner. How about labeling with a font larger than 2 points so you can tell them apart? Better still, the hell with the teensy soap bars and shampoo bottles. Bolt some big damn bottles of liquid soap, body wash they call it, and shampoo to the shower wall. That's a hell of a lot better. Put a goddamn vent fan in the bathroom, especially if the crapper's in the same room as the shower. If it's a room for four, how about four bath towels in there, not two or three? Maybe position the roll of ass wipe next to the crapper, not around the corner or behind you somewhere that only a contortionist can reach. And please stop at the two buttons on the tank behind you. Just have the damn flush handle on the side, as always. Now onto the main room. Lights. Lights, you idiots. You give me the right lighting, and I can make Nancy Pelosi look like Margot Robbie. That's a lie. Only Jesus could do that. And I don't think he would. But really, motel lighting is usually atrocious, huh? CFLs or LEDs putting out 4500K that looks like an operating theater, not a bedroom. Or bathroom mirrors so dim, shaving is a high-risk activity. And how about those air conditioners? Are they ever quiet? Do they ever maintain an even temperature? No. Why? Alarm clocks. Does anyone use the damn things? Either throw them out or have the maids be sure to set them on off. One night, we were awakened by... at 4 a.m. And why have a Wi-Fi password? Just make it automatic. And if the room has a nuker and a fridge, make sure those work too. How hard is that? Decor? I don't expect the plaza. But lots of motel rooms would be better off with bare walls and the nightmarish images they tack up. I saw a first this time around. One place we stayed had identical ugly prints over each bed. But this Drury place, they had everything perfect. Cheerful, comfortable, spotlessly clean. Nothing was amiss. Turns out the chain was built by a family back in the 1970s and is still privately held. Hat tip to those guys. They did everything right. Best motel room I've ever stayed in. No contest. Haiti actually has a little town. Population around 2,500 and falling fast. It is a ghost town in the making. We walked around for a little while. Whatever chance it had of survival has probably been destroyed by these stupid lockdowns. Most prominent casualty was what the locals claimed had been the best restaurant in town, a place called Patty Ann's. It has a big rooster atop a flagpole and a 50s vintage cop car out front as their roadside attractions. Patty Ann's gave up the ghost back in March. Now, there's debris at the base of the chicken's perch. The police car's tires are all flat, and it's thick with dust. A big sign out front says, "Closed until further notice." I saw a ton of signs like that. Behind every one is a story of heartbreak and hardship and anxiety and scarcity and despair. Was closing tiny restaurants in Haiti, Missouri, necessary for public health? Well, no more than leaving streets in major cities open for protests, riots, arson, and looting, huh? Unless somebody can find a fast fix for what's been done to American small businesses, self-employment is over. The only income opportunities will be Jeff fucking Bezos and Uncle Suck, Sam. Not a rosy future. There are no financial success stories to be carved out of those entities. Unless you become a bureaucrat or a politician, then you can become pretty goddamn wealthy as a public servant. I hope I'm wrong about a small business revival. I really do. The only eatery that managed to survive in Haiti, Missouri, was a Mexican joint. Well, they think it's Mexican. I practically live in Mexico, and I've never seen a burrito floating in cream sauce. The Farmers Bank, established in 1914, has probably not held a dollar in many moons. Its windows are painted over. Jim's jewelry repair probably hasn't fixed a watch since they started putting batteries in them. An impressive neon sign for Barkovitz's menswear stands atop a stout brick building, but in the display windows are no suits or shoes, just a cross and a sign saying, "He is risen." There are a lot of storefront churches in small town America. Seems like prayer is all they have left. Another church down the road a piece is the Fresh Fire Ministry of Pastor Willie Jones. I don't imagine he's doing any more business these days than Patty Ann's Chicken. By the way, I'll post pictures of these places on the show page at thatlarryshow.com and on Facebook in our little private group. When you look at them, you will see and feel how desolate and forlorn these places are. Well over 90% of the storefronts are empty. Yet, the resilience of the American spirit is amazing. There on the sidewalk was a fresh little sign in chalk saying, "Welcome, y'all." A woman stepped outside and asked us to come in and tell us what we thought of her new place. She had taken an abandoned retail location and sectioned it off for various local merchants, a hair salon, a clothier, some antiques, and her own little booth, a kind of a melange of knickknacks and t-shirts, stuff like that. My wife asked her if she lived in Haiti, and she answered, "No, I live over by mile marker 85. Now, that's an address you won't hear in Chicago or Miami. She was really enthusiastic and optimistic, and I sure hope she makes it. On the way out of town, we noticed a small wooden cabinet on a pedestal in the middle of a grassy lot. I stopped to have a closer look. On the glass door was hand-painted, "Brittany's Blessing Box. Take what you need, bring what you can." It was empty. We still had 6 states and over 1,800 miles to return home to Los Angeles, the city without a soul. I promised you that cucked and uncucked state-by-state list. Here's what I have so far. Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland. Do I really need to even say it? Cucked. Everybody masked and uptight. No matter on a windy beach or in a cornfield, you could feel the fear. Tennessee seemed cucked. After all, it's Al Gore country, isn't it? West Virginia, uncucked. Kentucky, uncucked. Missouri, well, I'll let you know in the next episode where the forbidden road trip continues. Come with me and meet a creepy psycho in a liquor store in Oklahoma. Ride shotgun when we have car trouble in the middle of an Arizona desert. Discover the mysterious trucker who came to the rescue. Meet a guy who was the inspiration for a character from the Pixar movie Cars, but seems like he'd have been better cast in Deliverance. Drift through more ghost towns teetering on the edge of extinction. Visit the world's greatest truck stop, a destination in itself. Have lunch with me and a bunch of biker combat vets at Delgadillo's Snowcap in Seligman, Arizona, where the neon sign in the window says, "Sorry, we're open," and meet an old soldier who's in the fight of his life. If you like what you just heard and want to help me keep the tank full and the wheels turning, click the Patreon button at thatlarryshow.com. Not only will it do your soul good, it opens the door to dozens of bonus episodes, signed books, custom recordings, and more. Follow the show on Twitter. We have a lot of fun there. Between shows, same address, That Larry Show. We're also on Instagram with a full archive of every fabulous thumbnail on one scrollable page with links to the shows you want to hear. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. I'll see you next Wednesday. And until that time, God bless America and take no shit.